The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
FBI is denying it targeted Catholics in its search for domestic terrorists. The Bureau is essentially disavowing a memo from one field office and says it does not go after people based on their religion. Well, some lawmakers today on Capitol Hill, they were not convinced.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what to think. I always want to trust. I always want to believe. What do you make of that report? Do you trust the FBI? Was it targeting Catholics? Maybe. I don't know. Should we give them the benefit of the doubt? I'll leave that up to you. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be with you today. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me for the next 3 hours. We've got a lot to get into. We'll talk about stuff all over the range. Stuff I find personally fascinating. There was a record amount of rain in the UAE. They had a year's worth of rainfall in the United Arab Emirates in 12 hours. A year's worth of rain in a half a day. Crazy. Some people think it deals with weather modification, that perhaps there was some cloud seeding going on. We're going to speak to somebody from, a former NASA member about that. And a little bit later, you know, the government also has come out, just like they did with the FBI, and they said, you know what? It's safe to say right now that there are no alien life behind all these UFO reports. Pentagon has done their study. They report no evidence of UFO visits. Dr. Paul Thigpen will stop by. We'll get plugged into him and a whole lot more. Of course, we're going to pray the chaplet. I hope you can stay with us. That's just some of what we're going to get into today. I always try to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. Let's talk about the FBI for a moment. Remember that leaked FBI report from Richmond, Virginia? The field office said that so-called radical traditional Catholics were, well, they were a possible source of domestic terrorism in this country. When it was first leaked, the FBI claimed it was just a solo product of that office and had no influence anywhere else. And then we learned it was sent to a number of other field offices. We learned that the field office in LA and other cities contributed to it as well. One of my favorite pieces of audio from Capitol Hill was Senator Josh Hawley, as you'll hear in this audio from Fox News. He grilled the FBI director, Christopher Wray, about this claim of traditional Catholics being targeted. This is a little bit of a flashback, but check it out.
Lawmakers are demanding more answers from FBI Director Christopher Wray about this controversial memo they say was used to infiltrate the Catholic Church and see if Catholics were perhaps behind any potential domestic violent extremism. The FBI is denying that, but FBI Director Wray got a grilling on Capitol Hill from Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, who chastised him, pointing to a new whistleblower revelation that the FBI interviewed a Virginia choir director and priest. But the FBI director said the memo and the interviews that happened are separate subjects.
FBI agents did approach a priest and a choir director to ask them to inform on parishioners. So were you lied to when you gave this testimony, or were you lying to Congress?
Neither. So your question conflates two different things. There was an investigation of a specific individual who was amassing Molotov cocktails and posting about killing people. And it does not surprise me that there were people who knew that subject in that investigation.
The FBI adding in a statement, any characterization the FBI is targeting Catholics is false. The interviews of the priest and choir director highlighted by the committee's report were conducted by FBI Richmond during an investigation of an individual threatening violence who has since been arrested.
Apparently it was the wrong clip that I was looking for. You know, I was looking just for his back and forth with Christopher Wray, but you get the big picture. I want to thank Jake Moore, my audio guy, for pulling the audio. Gives you a little bit of a broader perspective on what's happening there. The FBI director did tell the Department Inspector General to find out what was behind it. The IG came out with a 10-page report last week. So to no one's surprise, the inspector said, no malice at all intended by the two agents that were responsible for the report. In fact, the analyst claimed that they did try to help the Catholic Church protect itself from potential terrorist actions. And again, as I started, I'm not here to throw stones at the FBI. I'm just reporting on the back and forth and what went down. Senator Chuck Grassley, he told the Catholic News Agency that the report raises more questions than it answers. Here's what he said. He says, Director Ray has failed to sufficiently explain why he described the memo to Congress as a single product when there were two. The FBI has also failed to explain why it ordered the permanent deletion of files related to the memo or why it continues to use biased sources like the Southern Policy Law Center. So I think Senator Grassley raises some good questions. I'll continue to follow the story for you. Somebody said to me the other day, and, you know, I go back to my default position of trusting and seeing the good in most people and most organizations and agencies. Some people said, you know, Drew, Catholics and Christians are next. I was talking to somebody about broadcasting and how relevant radios continue to span out and to reach more souls. And they said, don't you think you're going to be next? If you keep speaking truth, if you keep shining the light on so many of these things that no one else is reporting on, don't you think the network is going to come in the crosshairs? And I'm thinking, oh, you know, what can they do? You know, but they're right. It gives us pause. So I'd ask you to say a prayer for protection over relevant radio, over all my colleagues, over the work that I do here as well. Because what we're involved with here is a spiritual work. It really is. It's the work of telling the truth, of shining the light of our Catholic faith and the teachings of our faith on what are very complex issues of the day. So I could use your prayers, certainly. I know this network could, because I think in the days ahead, that person was right. I initially discounted the thought, but I was saying my rosary on the way into the studio today. I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, Satan hates what we're doing. I mean, he hates what Relevant Radio is doing, bringing to you the chaplet, bringing to you the rosary, bringing to you stories of hope and inspiration, bringing to you truth in light of all that's unfolding around us. So I don't want to be naive. I don't want to be myopic. You know, I don't want to be blind to the realities around us. I also want to see things with my spiritual, you know, glasses on. And I know that Satan doesn't like what we're doing. So do I fear? No. Do I trust? Yes. Could I use your prayers? Absolutely. So let's pray for this great apostolate here. And I'll continue to do my best to report the news and give you a perspective you won't find anywhere else. You know, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has blasted the Biden administration. They have rules for implementing the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And I don't know if you heard about this story or not. Bishop Kevin Rhodes, he said that the law, and I'll quote him, he says, quote, as written, is a pro-life law that protects the security and the physical health of pregnant mothers and their unborn children. He says, it's indefensible for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to twist the law in a way that violates the conscience of pro-life workers by making them facilitate abortions. No employer should be forced to participate in an employee's decision to end the life of a child. So Roger Severino, he hails from the Heritage Foundation. He criticized the Biden administration's attempt to make something that's supposed to help pregnant women, right? That's what this was about. And again, I go back to the spiritual. Satan loves to twist, loves to distort, loves to take something good and flip it. So what we're now seeing is the Biden administration attempting to take something that should help pregnant women and turn it into killing babies. Listen to what he said.
Yeah, it's not surprising in one sense, but their creativity apparently knows no bounds when it comes to pushing abortion on the American people. As you mentioned, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, this was a bill designed to protect pregnant workers. What is the opposite of pregnancy? Abortion. Yet this administration, through EEOC proposed regulations, is saying that abortion is going to be a protected, enshrined right, that workers will have a right to an accommodation, even in pro-life states. And they're going to use a supremacy clause argument saying that the federal law is going to push aside all the pro-life state laws that prohibit cooperation and assisting in abortion. So employers around the country are going to be forced to assist in abortions in violation of state law if the Biden administration gets its way in flipping what protection should have been for pregnant women on its head.
And you shouldn't have to put workers in that position, right? Do you leave your job, possibly lose your home, your ability to provide for your family because you're put in an untenable situation? I mean, it's absolutely horrific. There is such consequence for our country by these types of actions. One similar note here, and I'll grab a caller too. Rick in Philadelphia, I'll grab you. On a similar note, the Supreme Court, they're going to be holding a hearing tomorrow. There's a case from Idaho where the Biden administration is trying to force the state emergency rooms to become abortion clinics. Again, and this is, people get so mad at me. I'm not endorsing Donald Trump. I just can't see how any human being who believes that life begins at the moment of conception and has an inherent dignity, an inalienable right to life, right, should be terminated. Biden administration wants to force state emergency rooms to become abortion clinics. Federal law requires emergency rooms to stabilize patients despite their ability to pay, and the Biden administration is trying to say that includes a mother presenting, you know, herself to have an abortion, even if it's not a medical emergency. So you walk in there, and you can get your abortion paid for. The state's fighting back because it outlaws supposedly elective abortions. If you want to join me, 888-914-9149. Rick is listening to us in the city of brotherly love. Hey, Rick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Hey, good to talk to you. Thanks for dialing in. So you worked for the federal government, my call screener was telling me?
Yep, still working for them for about over 15 years.
So what happened?
It was about 2020. Well, this is one of multiple things that have happened, but about 2020, mandatory training issued. This was after the whole January 6th stuff.
Yeah.
They sent out this slide presentation required to review. And on one of the slides, it listed hate groups, and radical traditional Catholicism was identified.
Wow.
Along with CFAM. I didn't acknowledge the training, obviously, because it was an error. But that was from the source on the slide. It was Southern Poverty Law Institute.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what
it was. How did you get out of it? I don't get it. I mean, did you say, I'm not going to take this training?
Oh, yeah, I just replied. I said, hey, I do not acknowledge to the Washington, D.C. office that required this training. Acknowledge that I reviewed this unless you tell them my feedback.
Wow.
And my feedback was that, you know, yeah, I am considering myself a radical traditional Catholic because I believe, you know, Jesus Christ and his teachings.
Amen.
So, and nobody said anything. So.
Well, good for you. Yeah, you know, I wish more people would do what you do, say, hey, no way, I'm not going to participate in this. And you're right, it's ridiculous to target Catholics like that as terrorists, basically. Rick, thank you. I appreciate the perspective, appreciate the call. It's good to have you. I only have a few minutes. I got to change gears. I'm going to talk also a little bit about this bizarre weather event that we're seeing. But let me just bring you to one other story quickly here, just in terms of the national scene. I have never prayed so much for world peace as I have in the past, I don't know, year. It's been part of my regular prayer formula now. On the things I present to the Lord, I'm always asking for peace. I often think of what happened before world wars, before World War I, before World War II, the movements that took place, the animosities, the confusion, things that could have been diverted. Poland right now is upping the ante for Russia on the nuclear front. In years past, Russia's gotten, of course, very upset with NATO possibly putting nuclear arms in Poland. And you're looking at it from Russia's standpoint, you can understand that. But the president there, the president of Poland, is a guy named Duda. He put pressure on Russia on Monday, suggesting that NATO nuclear heads could soon be positioned on its territory. And you know, the defense spending around the world has dramatically increased, with Poland actually leading the way. Duda told, I guess, one magazine, it was a Polish magazine that he was talking to, that Russia is increasingly militarizing Kaliningrad. And it has been relocating its nuclear weapons to Belarus. And he says, if our allies decide to deploy weapons as part of nuclear sharing on our territory as well, he says, in order to strengthen the security of NATO's eastern flank, we're ready for it. And he says, let's just pray that it does not happen. Let's pray that it does not happen. I'm praying for the same thing, to be honest with you. I had a conversation with a man from Lithuania yesterday. And this particular man really believes he's been back and forth to Lithuania, Ukraine, Poland. He doesn't think Vladimir Putin is going to stop. If Vladimir Putin can roll through Ukraine, he's going to move into Poland. Now, I don't see that happening personally, just because it would be World War III. You know, NATO, because of Article 5, we'd be in. But he says, look, two bombs already fell into Poland, right? He says, and what did they do? Oh, they were mistakes. Nothing. And I'm glad. I don't want to see a world war, but it's just food for thought. I hope you'll join me in praying as well. I do want to hit another issue. I want to talk about this unbelievable rain that the United Arab Emirates received, especially Dubai. They got inundated. It was torrential. They got a year's worth of rain in 12 hours. A year's worth of rain in 12 hours. This is an area known for deserts. It's an area known for sandstorms. And if you saw any of the images, I was struck by them. Flooded roadways, even at the airports were closed. And rumors were surfacing that the UAE, the government, was experimenting with something called cloud seeding. And of course, no one would think of doing that here in the U.S., would they? I did a little research on this right before the show, but Roy Spencer's going to join me. I want to get his take on it. Actually, yes, there's an old aircraft carrier base in Alameda, California, just south of San Francisco. And some scientists have used that as a base to shoot microscopic salt particles into the sky as an experiment to see if it would increase cloud cover. And the idea is that they want to try this to reflect the sun away from the Earth and cool the Earth down. Only they didn't tell anyone they were doing this, you know, because of ordinary people might get upset. Nobody likes geoengineering efforts without their knowledge. So this is not a conspiracy theory either. It was reported in the New York Times. So I thought we could talk a little bit about this. You know, everything from global warming to El Nino to the possibility of seeding the clouds and weather modification. I'm joined right now by Roy Spencer. He's principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. Before that, he was a senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, and it's good to have him here with us. He's provided congressional testimony several times on the subject of global warming, so nobody better to talk to. Hey, doctor, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for your time. So what do you make of that rain? Is that just an anomaly? Is it global warming? The UAE getting a year's worth of rain in 12 hours? Pretty amazing footage.
Well, there's always some place on Earth, you know, every few months that gets that kind of record rain event. Okay, this time it was Dubai. Now, I looked at the weather situation that was involved in that. You know, it wasn't just some isolated cloud that suddenly appeared out of this clear desert sky and dumped inches and inches of rain. It was a cold air mass that came down out of the north, which is, you know, a little unusual for this time of year and for that far south, but it happens, you know, it happens. And the forecasts were for that thing to cause quite a bit of rain, you know, through what we call baroclinic instability. It's what causes most of our precipitation during the cold season for those of us that live in areas that have a cold season.
Yeah, right.
So it was something that, you know, it was just, you know, sort of a fluke of nature. And this happens from time to time here and there. And of course, you know, the usual suspects are trying to make a big deal out of it as some sort of indication of climate change. But no, it was just an unusual weather event, and unusual weather events happen somewhere in the world all the time.
Yeah, it's good to know. Let's talk cloud seeding for a moment, if we can. I'd love to get your take on it. I think of how much desert there is. I even think of our own country, Lake Mead and so many other areas, even the Colorado River, you know, at these very low levels. Explain cloud seeding. It's a form of weather modification. Of course, it enhances precipitation. But how does it work? Is it even ethical?
Cloud seeding traditionally, this goes back to the 1950s and 60s. That's when most of the cloud seeding experiments funded by the government occurred. It was a long time ago. Mm. And they put a lot of money into this. A lot of work went into it. You know, a lot of people that are now retired, you know, spent their careers working on it. And basically what they tried to do was to seed clouds with silver iodide particles to try to stimulate precipitation formation. And what they learned in the end was basically, if a cloud wasn't already ready to precipitate, there was really no use in seeding anyway, that the clouds are going to rain. It's kind of like you can't fool Mother Nature, mm-hmm. that the whole process ended up being, we really couldn't demonstrate statistically whether we had an effect through cloud seeding or not. Well, now the idea is connected with geoengineering. And geoengineering is the efforts that some people are promoting to try to cool the planet.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this thing that's going on in Alameda, California, this is silliness, okay? The air out there is already saturated with salt aerosols because they're in the marine boundary layer
right,
perpetually, you know? And the ocean is constantly creating marine salt aerosols in the air. I have no idea what they're trying to prove by doing this. They aren't going to be able to find, I don't care how much salt they're trying to spray into the air, they're never going to find any kind of statistically significant effect on clouds. I think this is some sort of publicity stunt. If people want to change the climate, the way you do it is how volcanoes change the climate, which is you inject millions of tons of sulfur into the stratosphere, which is theoretically possible if you got enough money and enough, you know, jet aircraft to carry all of this stuff up there.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot. Like I said, millions of tons. They estimate the Pinatubo eruption in 1991 in the Philippines produced 20 million tons of sulfur that it injected into the stratosphere.
Wow.
That's the only practical way, you know, to cool things off, and it's by a small amount.
How concerned are you about rising temperatures? Is this all part of I know solar activity is involved. We've only been tracking weather records for a couple hundred years. When we moved to cooling the planet, I remember, was it the 70s or 80s? They were worried about another ice age. And
now
we have a totally different mantra. And I want to be on the right side of this. But, you know, when we start to manipulate weather and try to cool the earth down, that always gives me pause.
Well, it's basically, you know, it's one of these situations where, you know, there's some truth to what people are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we have warmed, okay? We're probably warmer now than we have been in maybe 1,000 years, okay? And I think that probably most of that warming is due to increasing carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels, okay? So, but the question is, so what? Okay.
Right.
How much of an effect is it going to have?
Right.
Well, so far we know increasing CO2 has caused global greening. It's increased temperatures by maybe 1°C on average, globally averaged. Okay. That's something people can live with because generally warmer is better. So, you know, nature is on the whole benefiting from more CO2. Humans are probably on the whole benefiting from a little warmer temperatures. So the question is, should we be worried? Well, that's where we get into projections of the future, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of what people hear through the news is going to be projections of not 1 degree, but several degrees of warming in the future.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, I just blogged on today. If people want to see it, drroyspencer.com. There are reasons now to show from observational data that just modest reductions in our CO2 emissions will stabilize everything and limit future warming to very manageable levels. And this is very different from what everyone is being told. What everyone is being told lately is what we need to go for is net zero. Net zero. That's what you hear in the news.
Yep.
You know, that's what you read about from environmental organizations. We got to go to net zero. What that means is reduce basically all carbon dioxide emissions, which is probably physically impossible. You know, humanity still depends on fossil fuels, okay? So what I'm saying is, you know, our research, which we're going to try to get published, and I've been blogging on, suggests that it, and I'm not the only one saying this, other people have said it too, it's just not popular, that it doesn't take very much reduction in our CO2 emissions for CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere to stabilize and to reduce future warming to levels that we can live with.
Well, my guest today, Dr. Roy Spencer. Dr. Maggie, do I have time for calls? Let me grab a quick call. Richard in Sacramento, California. You're on with the doctor. Good afternoon.
Oh, Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I grew up in Modesto, and I remember in the 1980s, they were doing cloud seeding just east of Modesto into the Sierra Nevada, trying to see if they could increase the amount of snow. And I believe they did this for a couple of years, and then suddenly they stopped, and nobody really found out if it had any effect on the snow, you know. So there was kind of controversy in the newspapers back then about, well, is this salt going to be like falling down and hitting the forest floor? And
stuff? Yeah. Well, hey, Richard, thank you. I only have a minute, so I'll let Dr. Spencer follow up. I know there was talk of countries like Russia and Canada using seeding, or at least trying to, for hail suppression, pollution control in China, like areas like Beijing. Some people want it for drought relief. You're saying, doctor, it's been tried and it pretty much has failed. Are any countries doing this right now?
Well, yeah, I think different, like you just mentioned, there are countries that claim that they're doing it and they think it has an effect. But I think that's mostly PR buzz, you know, trying to justify what they're spending money on without good statistical evidence that it has much of an effect. And, you know, what happened in Modesto or in the area around Modesto in California, that would be like almost impossible to tell whether you changed snowfall in the Sierra. As an aside, the long-term measurements in the Sierra suggest there has been no long-term change in snowfall there.
Yeah.
Of course, there's huge year-to-year variations. We know that, man, because they get some, you know, bad, really bad drought winters, and they get some, like this past winter, you know, really get dumped on. But the long-term, you know, there's been no change.
Yeah, Doctor, I'd love to bring you back and talk more, because I was reading earlier today about the transition from the El Nino to La Nina. And it's supposed to impact weather patterns in the U.S. and globally. I'm supercharging, they're saying, the hurricane season. We've had a couple mild ones go by. Just a final thought on where we are right now. What do you see hurricane season like? And some final thoughts.
Well, the people that I follow that look into that are saying it's probably going to be a very active hurricane season.
Yeah.
Because of La Nina coming on, and apparently other indicators that they look at are looking, everything is combining to make it look like a bad hurricane season.
Well, I am grateful for your time. We'll continue to take a look at all this. I'd love to also talk to you just about the transition to going green. I know the Biden administration is very big on that, but that's another conversation for another time. Hey, doctor, the best way to check you out, drroyspencer.com?
Yes.
All right, drroyspencer.com, drroyspencer.com. Check him out, and hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, Drew. Thank you.
God bless you. It's bottom of the hour. I need to take a very short pause. When I come back, have you heard of Zyn? Z-Y-N. Have you heard of the rise of cannabis at weddings? We're going to look at that and more. Stay with me.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Viviana, who's listening in California, for donating her 1975 Mercedes-Benz 450. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Get informed and get connected. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. Trying to get you up to speed on what's happening in the culture. We can always look at it, of course, through the eyes of our faith, whether we are dealing with weather modification or edibles or cannabis at weddings or even Zyn. Have you heard of Zyn, Z-Y-N? It said oral nicotine and, you know, cigarettes. I don't know whether you smoke or not. I don't understand smoke. I never really smoked. You know, I know there are a lot of people who still do it. The cost of it has become so prohibitive, but it's been a major part of American culture for decades. Maybe your parents smoked or siblings or somebody else. A lot of science has come forward showing the negative impact of it on your health. And I think it's making a big dent in the use. In the last 50 years, a percentage of Americans using tobacco, it's gone down 42 to 15%. And that, of course, is cut into tobacco company profits, although they're trying to make it up now through vaping. That's another way they're making their money, right? But the tobacco companies are doing something completely different. Nicotine is the drug that's in cigarettes that gets people hooked. And That's why they did so well for so long. So somebody decided, hey, why don't we just put nicotine into a pouch, you know, and flavor it? That's basically what Zyn is. The Wall Street Journal was reporting that in the last quarter of 2023, there was a 78% increase in sales of this stuff over the same quarter in 2022. And on top of that, tobacco companies are getting involved. Also now in marijuana sales. That's where their sights are now set. I think they see the marijuana industry, the cannabis industry, as, you know, it's the next tobacco for them, if you will. There's a lot of money to be made in it. You know, this Zyn is a very addictive drug, and they're willing to help people start using it so they can make money off of it. And I think it's a little bit sinister, you know, to profit off of somebody's addiction. But the Chicago Tribune, I saw a piece the other day, I think it was the other day or a couple of days ago. They were reporting, you know, a lot of states have legalized marijuana now. They were reporting that cannabis use at weddings and holiday parties, even corporate events, is on the increase in states where it's been legalized for recreational use. I knew a guy, true story, right? He worked for a company in Chicago. They did high finance or something like that in this company, or some sort of financial stuff. And his boss liked to get high, so he'd smoke all the time. And they went to like a Christmas party, and this guy who I know, who worked there, was getting high with his boss. And I'm like, what's the matter with you? You do not want, oh no, he does it all the time. But this is becoming part of the culture. Maybe I look at things just a little bit differently. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be smoking pot with my boss, right? Or if you would. It's like getting drunk, I would think, at your Christmas party. You don't want to do that at your Christmas party either. So the Tribune said this. They said at a recent wedding reception in Chicago, guests gathered to toast the newlyweds at the bar. Glasses were lined up in front of them, but no alcohol was poured in. Instead, marijuana vapor was pumped into the upside-down glasses, which were then lifted, and you inhaled them all in unison. All right, on three. One, two, three. And everybody took a big toke. This is the culture. This is where we're heading. I thought we'd look at it. Maybe you'll end up at a wedding somewhere like that. All right? I was sharing with Maggie before the show. I think it's either on YouTube or some cable station somewhere. There was YouTube. There was a cooking show. Now you have all these cooking competitions and shows. They actually have a cooking show where they it's all cannabis based, and you have your appetizer, maybe your salad dressing has some sort of infused cannabis oil, maybe the mashed potatoes, the butter, you know, I don't know how they cook all this stuff, whether they grind it or they turn it into butters or liquids, the desserts, and they are grated on each meal. And I guess at the end, pretty much, you know, people are pretty stoned by the end of it. But that's the culture. A lot of celebrities go onto the show, and that's where we are right now. I thought we could talk about it. Let's talk about Zyn. Let's talk about marijuana, maybe what you are seeing. Dr. Charles Bentz, he joins me today. He's a general internist in private practice. It's good to have him with us. He hails from Portland, Oregon, and he's a specialist in smoking cessation. Doctor, thanks for your time. Good afternoon.
It's great to be with you, Drew.
Thanks so much. Let me start with marijuana. Just a quick question. I do want to get over to Zyn. Marijuana is not addictive, is it, in its nature? I mean, nicotine has a very powerful addictive nature to it. What about pot? What about marijuana?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that most people don't think of marijuana as addictive. However, about 1 in 10 people become really addicted to it. They get addicted to the euphoria. They get addicted habitually to using. It's kind of like if your world is full of troubles and it's you can escape them for a while. I mean, and you get a little euphoria at the same time. I mean, that can be very attractive, and it can become a habit. And some people get addicted. Now, by addiction, you mean if you stop it, you feel real bad. You have problems coping and dealing, and you have craving. You don't feel good until you use the substance again. That's what we call a substance use disorder or chemical dependency. And that applies to a lot of different substances. And there are a substantial a proportion of people who actually can become addicted to marijuana. So the fact that you think it's not addictive, that's actually not true.
Yeah, I know one
it
guy
can
who
be. It certainly can be.
I know one guy who wakes and bakes. I mean, he has his cup of coffee and he's got his a little bowl on the end of this coffee cup. So he's getting stimulant from the caffeine and he's starting his day. That way, I don't know if he does it every day. Maybe it's a weekend thing for him. But I look at the nature of it, and it's a daily use thing. I just was wondering, you know, is it addictive? If you really want it to stop, can you just put it down? Like cigarettes or something different. Zyn is something different. Zyn is relatively new. I think I've got a colleague who uses Zyn, used to be a smoker. Tell us a little bit about Zyn and what compounds in it that is now seeing such a stark increase in people wanting to use it.
Yeah, so I think it's helpful with these nicotine pouches, and Zyn is one of the more popular ones, is just to understand, you know, traditionally nicotine has been, it's comparing it to smoking, smoking cigarettes, smoking cigars, a smoking pipe. You know, you light the tobacco on fire and you inhale it, and it's the nicotine that's very, very, it's the thing that gives you the hit in the brain that makes you feel this is good. Mm. Without nicotine, it would be like, you know, inhaling smoke from a campfire. Mm-hmm. And most people have the experience of being around a campfire and the smoke comes and you actually avoid it. Smoke is pretty noxious for most folks. They don't like it. But when you add nicotine to it, nicotine is the thing that makes you, it imitates one of the neurotransmitters in our brain and it actually gives us pleasure. And so that's why we like it. And cigarettes, very harmful. And then, of course, vaping, less harmful, but still harmful. And finally, as you said in the intro, you know, let's just put some pure nicotine salt in a pouch with, you know, a little plant fiber and some flavoring. And actually, a lot of the harmful, you know, products of combustion with both smoking and vaping are just not there. And so you really are just giving nicotine. But it still has the same addictive properties of nicotine in any other form and people. That when you have nicotine, whether it's in Zyn or whether it's in a cigarette, mm-hmm. it stimulates the pleasure center in your brain, and you like it. I mean, there's been studies done on rats where you actually put a little electrode that stimulates the area of the brain that nicotine, the pleasure center that nicotine uses, and if you give rats the choice of stimulating this electrode that gives them the pleasure from nicotine or if you want, they'll choose that every time over eating, over anything else. And wow. So we just know from a very basic standpoint that nicotine is a potent stimulator of dopamine in the brain, which is our pleasure center. You get dopamine every time you eat a steak or every time you listen to some really good music or any of that sense of pleasure mm-hmm. that you have, that nicotine does that. And so even if you've never smoked or you've never used nicotine, think about a pleasurable experience you've had. And then just say, okay, that's what they're getting. Yep. And the problem with nicotine is not that it is, it stimulates the pleasure center, but that you become habituated to it. So then when you don't use it, you actually get nicotine withdrawal. And nicotine withdrawal is actually pretty uncomfortable. Anxiety, irritability, depression, cravings. It's just, it causes withdrawal, which is the definition of something that is addictive. And so that's a real problem with Zyn, is that you're getting the nicotine, but you also become dependent and you become addicted. And when you don't use it, you're in withdrawal. So there's real troubles with nicotine products like this.
All right. Well, Doctor, hold the thought. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take a few of your telephone calls. If you want to join us, the number here, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you're just tuning in, we are taking a look at the rise of Zyn, analyzing the popularity, why so many people are using it, and also the concerns. And this might be new to you. Maybe you've seen the patch your kids have or somebody else that's using it. Thought we'd put you in the know. We're back with more conversation right after this short break. Stay with us.
All the issues, all the topics, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. We're going to pray the chaplet coming up in about 12, 15 minutes. So feel free to get in at 888-914-9149. If you want to join our conversation right now, that number is good for it, too. We're speaking today to Dr. Charles Benz, and we're talking about the rise of Zyn, Z-Y-N. It's rising in popularity and in use in recent years. This is really emerges the latest player, if you will, in the nicotine product market. And it's an oral nicotine product, particularly, popular amongst young adults. It's discreet in terms of its use. It comes in lots of different flavors. But with the rise of its popularity also comes with concerns about its health impacts, its addictive nature, and even the regulatory challenges that have often surfaced. So what do you do about it if your loved one is on it? How concerned should you be? Well, Dr. Charles Benz, as I said, joins me today, and he's an internist in private practice in Portland, Oregon, and specialist in smoking cessation. We'll take a few of your calls for him as well here. Doctor, let's talk about the kids. It's in particular, this is rising in its popularity. I think it's the prefrontal cortex of the brain in young men doesn't finish developing to what? You're 25, 26 years old, somewhere in that range. Does nicotine have the same impact that marijuana does? And is this now being targeted at kids in particular? And what concerns do you have?
Yeah, so if you look at the nicotine pouch industry, it's flavored pouches. And so right away when you hear the word or see it, oh, this is flavored, you're really aiming for a younger audience. And the marketing is directly, to kids and especially what's going on social media right now with all of the use and it's become really popular in the culture. And the concern I have is it's just as addicting for children as it is for adults. And do you really want your kids addicted to something that they have to have? And when you use it, you actually have withdrawal. And withdrawal is a serious mental health concern. If you're someone who's prone to depression, going through withdrawal, 3/4 of people going through nicotine withdrawal can have a full-blown major depressive episode. If you've had that before, if you've never had depression, if you go through a nicotine withdrawal episode, up to a third of people going through nicotine withdrawal who have no prior history of depression can have an acute, full-on depressive episode. So I link this to the mental health crisis that we have. And so for me, you think about people who use tobacco, it's a neurotransmitter. And so if you're having a bad day, you have a couple puffs and you feel better. Or if you're really anxious, you go outside, have a couple puffs, and you feel better. Now, part of that is, going outside and taking a break, but it's also the nicotine. Mm-hmm. Now, we're giving, and so people never learn to cope with their emotions. Like if you're having a strong emotions or low emotions, we want people to fully engage their humanity and deal with emotions and learn how to live and navigate emotional worlds. But if you have a medicine that sort of, bypasses that allows you to artificially change emotion, right. It's one thing for adults to do what they want to do, but for kids who are in a critical stage of development, you just don't want to expose children to these basically psychoactive substances. And that's really true with nicotine, but I think it's even more true with cannabis and with marijuana.
Well, Karen is in Cookeville, Tennessee. Karen, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, you're on the air, Dr. Benz, so go right ahead.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yes, my husband is a retired surgeon, and we opened a vape shop about 10 years ago. We had three sons, and all three sons and their wives had gotten off of cigarettes by vaping. So he read the research that was available at the time and was extremely impressed and decided that we... that was our goal as well, because I think stats have been like 450,000 people a year die from cigarette smoking related illnesses. What we found is that, it does reduce depression. It reduces anxiety. The percentage of milligrams of nicotine that's in vape juice and vape products is significantly less than what's in a cigarette. Then you also don't have all the harmful tars and cancer-causing agents, which is why it's not labeled showing that it causes cancer. Mm-hmm. In Great Britain, the government is giving vape kits out to its constituents to help them quit smoking. And one of the things we found is that people, because we offer a range of milligrams, they can titrate down to eventually 0 milligrams of nicotine. And I would guess that probably about 40% of our customers have done just that, and then they went from smoking to vaping. And Great Britain also has, evidently, they have vape lounges in hospitals, downstairs in lobbies.
Karen,
have big tobacco, though.
Let Dr. Bentz respond to you, sure. Saying something a little bit different, Doctor, sure. Nicotine can help with depression.
Okay, and I'll go now, then.
Hey, thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate it. So, I mean, her husband's a surgeon as well, a physician, says that it can help with depression. It's a little bit different than what you had recently stated. Maybe you can expand on that. You heard her comments as well.
Yeah. So nicotine, especially when it's combusted, it actually is a sort of a free base of the nicotine. It crosses the blood-brain barrier, and immediately, like I said, if you're having a down day, nicotine can pick you up. And if you're having an anxiety an attack or an anxious period, a little nicotine can kind of calm you down, and everybody who uses tobacco kind of understands that. And so it's actually true, but as a treatment for depression or anxiety, I would have some issues. And again, she mentions the United Kingdom, which is, really smart people over there. But you have to understand that they've adopted a harm reduction strategy, and that's actually true what she said. They actually encourage vaping over cigarettes to reduce harm. And while it's true that, smoking, if you compare anything to cigarettes, it's like each cigarette is basically a miniature, toxic dump experience. There's like 6,000 known chemicals, and over 60, almost 70 of them are known cancer-causing components, and it doubles or triples the rate of heart attacks. So smoking is really bad. So if you compare anything to smoking, it's going to win. And vape, actually, when you compare it to smoking, there's no question that it is less harm. But there, instead of 60 known carcinogens, that if you look at the data on analyzing what's in the vape, what's in the fog that you inhale, there's a half a dozen known carcinogens in vape. Wow. And there's over 2,000 chemicals, most of which we don't know about, but they are the products of superheating liquids that actually we don't know what's going to happen. And there's a lot of very concerned health researchers who are concerned about harm. And to say that vaping has no harm is actually disingenuous. And so there is harm to vaping. It's not even comparable to the harm of cigarettes, but it's still there. And again, in the UK, they have a different approach than we do here in the US, where, you're just not allowed to put anything that's harmful out to anybody for anything. And just think about the environmentalist movement and what we're trying to do to make our environment safer. Do we really want to promote something that's harmful? And you really have to think about that. And you can say, well, it's less harmful than smoking, but the best thing is to get off of all addictive substances if you really want to live a full human life, to be a human being fully alive. So that's what I would say. That's where I would sort of probably, and we could have a really good conversation about this.
So how does one who is addicted to nicotine, whether it's Zyn or cigarettes or something else, how do you get yourself off? I mean, our last caller from Tennessee says vaping was a good alternative. They were able to, wean themselves off. I mean, you are a cessation expert, a specialist. What advice would you give to anybody who says, I'd love to quit, but I can't?
Yes, and I'll tell you what, at most times, people go through the cycle of wanting to quit, and to the first beginning is to want to quit. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. If you really want to quit, there's a way to do it. But it starts with the motivation of wanting to quit. And there's lots of good reasons to quit vaping and to quit, you know, nicotine. But that's the first step. And then after that, you know, it's like, how serious are you? And there's a skill set. It takes a long time to develop the habits of nicotine use. And there are people who can teach you the habits, the pure just motor skills and habits,
yeah.
And also the psychological reasons that you might be using nicotine, which are there, and how to address those, the psychological and the behavioral aspects, but also the pharmaceutical issues that are needed because you're really trying to ameliorate or to reduce withdrawal symptoms as you quit. And there are a number of really good FDA-approved medications that can help you quit and are proven to do this. And quite frankly, say I tried that, that didn't work, but it's kind of like riding a bike.
Yeah.
First time you rode a bike, you might not have been that good. Quitting and learning to be a non-nicotine user is a skill set that you need to develop. And so the second time you attempt, you're going to be more effective than the first time. And the third time you attempt to quit, you're going to be better because you're going to learn from those prior, you know, relapses. And so it's a process. It's not a one-time deal. And it's a, now that you have nicotine dependence, now that you're dependent on nicotine, you have to work at it.
Well, doctor, we're going to pray the chaplet. I know because we love KBVM and you hail from Portland, Oregon. They pray with us every day. I'll pray for your intentions. Let's pray for those addicted. Emily in Helena, Montana missed her call. I want to hear what a dental hygienist had to say about Zyn. Stay with us. We'll be right back.